My first book was turned down 268 times in a row. And the 269th publisher said, "Well, do it. Just change the title, beginning, middle, end." It was horrible.
Change everything.
Yeah, well, I'm dyslexic. It was like dog, boat, beaver, go. It made no sense. So I didn't take it personal. I got a ghostwriter. They took my words and crafted it in a way people would want to read it. Mm-hmm. And one quote from that book was shared 37 million times. Wow. You've seen it on coffee mugs, T-shirts.
What quote is it?
It says, "A dream written down with a date becomes a goal. A goal broken into steps becomes a plan. A plan backed by action makes your dreams come true."
Real business owner.
Whatever your situation is currently is not your forever situation.
That's really what real business owners is, man. Like, we don't care where you come from. Yeah. Where are you going?
Our goal and our job is to reduce the mistakes that you have to make or the money that you have to lose.
You want to be an entrepreneur? You want to be successful? Don't give up.
You learn, adjust, and continue to move forward.
Welcome back to another episode of Real Business Owners with myself, Trevor Cowley. Today, we have an incredible guest, Greg Reed, author, speaker, producer, creator of The Secret Knock. You've got how many published books? 20 plus published books, successful father. That's a lot to juggle. And prior to hopping on, we were talking about environments, and we were just starting to kind of get after it. And we just decided to, hey, let's turn these cameras on and have this conversation. And so I'm super pumped to have you on the podcast, and I appreciate sharing time with a legend like you. So thank you for that.
There you go. Let's go. Look, are we a product of our environment, right?
Yeah.
And I truly believe we're a product of our social dynamic, because at the end of the day, most of the people that grew up in the hood that got out, they did really well. So it wasn't the environment. It was the social dynamic. Did you have a good father role model, or did you have a mentor, or did you have someone to guide you by your hand? And what's interesting is when you and I were kids, we had about 7 minutes a day FaceTime with our dads because they were out working.
Yeah.
And now our generation, we're having more and more time to spend with our kids, and I think that's why their dynamic's changing a little bit in a positive way.
I saw something cool on social media the other day, and it just said, be careful about the information, the people, because everything just rubs out. You become what you eat, you become what you listen to, you become what you read, all of those things. And as we were talking prior to hopping on, I was just like, I'm a big believer in trying to control as much as I possibly can so that I control who I'm becoming.
Right.
And the more that you can control who you are, the more you have the ability to control your outcomes, right? And what you're able to produce for your life. And I want to know a little bit more about some of the situations that you put yourself in for all the wins that you currently have, right? Like, there's no possible way that you have the life resume that you have unless it's by design or with a lot of intention. So where did that come from? Was that as a kid you always knew that you were just going to be this individual that was going to do something special? Or where you're at today, does that even surprise you sometimes?
Yeah, I'm the least qualified guy to do what I do.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just
right. I think everybody feels that way.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of looking around like, is this really happening?
Yeah, are you kidding me right now? Yeah. So here's the secret for myself.
Yeah.
As successful people seek counsel and failures listen to opinion.
Mm.
Think about it. Counsel is based on wisdom, knowledge, mentorship. People have paved the way.
Yeah.
But opinions like your uncles and your people that you try to convince what you're going to, share your dreams and aspirations, but they don't get it.
Yeah.
So if I go to a family friend and say, hey, I'm going to write a best-selling book, my family and friends might try to talk me out of that to protect me, to keep me safe, because they know I'm dyslexic. And guess what? They've never written a best-selling book. But if I go to Mark Victor Hansen, who wrote Chicken Soup for the Soul, he's going to say, Greg, sit down. Here's what you need to know and give you counsel.
Mm.
If we would spend our activity only seeking counsel and ignoring opinion, that's a day your life would change.
So after writing, 20-plus books, did the process for writing books change and evolve over that time, or is it pretty much the same as the very first book? And if so, I mean, what does that process look like? Do you go to a cabin for 10 days and just brain dump, or is it a little bit every single day kind of chipping away at it? What does that process look like for you?
So here's the craziest part. I've been published now in 150 books, 45 languages, have a star on the Walk of Fame, yet I'm dyslexic, can't spell, can't read, and can't write very well. If you play me Words with Friends, you'll win every single time. And when you do a book, you write something called a query letter. It says who you are, what's your message, why are you an expert, who's going to read your book.
Yeah.
My first book was turned down 268 times in a row. And the 269th publisher said, well, do it. Just change the title, beginning, middle, end. It was horrible.
Change everything.
Yeah, well, I'm dyslexic. It was like dog, boat, beaver, go. It made no sense. So I didn't take it personal. I got a ghostwriter. They took my words and crafted it in a way people would want to read it. And one quote from that book was shared 37 million times. Wow. You've seen it on coffee mugs, T-shirts.
What quote is it?
It says, "A dream written down with a date becomes a goal. A goal broken into steps becomes a plan. A plan backed by action makes your dreams come true." Mm. Yeah, shared 37 million times from a book that was turned down 260 times in a row.
Where were you at in your life at that point when you came up with that quote?
Well, I was going through a good author works on what they need help with.
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
It's the same thing.
Was that a message to yourself?
Yes, absolutely. I was a quitter.
Yeah.
I used to quit. So that's why when we did this book, Three Feet from Gold, was about not giving up before the miracle happens. And then I wrote the book, Stickability. Right now, I just did one's called The Secret of Happiness. Why? Because we're all looking for this happy magic bullet.
Yeah.
And that's the whole idea. By the way, you know what the secret of happiness is?
What is it?
The definition in which you give it.
Mm.
If you ask 1,000 people, everyone has a different variation.
Yeah.
So the secret of happiness is the definition of what you give it. But the challenge is most people won't define when they're happy or not. So therefore, they live a miserable existence. If you sat there and said, hey, right now, if I got a caramel macchiato, it would make me happy.
Yeah.
And then you go get one. Well, you just made yourself happiness.
Mm. So it could be as simple as something like that.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's a moving target. Think about it. You wake up on the way here today.
Yeah.
You say, man, if I can get here on time for this interview, I'll be happy.
Yeah.
And then you show up and say, man, if I that bathroom's open, I'm going to be happy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So the whole idea is these little moving things. That the moment that we start realizing it and putting a definition on it, it's kind of like an archery guy. If you keep flinging a bow and arrow in the sky, you don't know if you're on track.
Yeah.
But when you give yourself a target, you know exactly how you're doing.
How far off you are.
That's it.
Let me ask you this. So there's the happiness is progress. There's that statement, right?
Like, right.
I do believe that God designed us to evolve, right? Like, we wouldn't have been given a brain that has the ability to continue to absorb information if that's not what we were supposed to do, right?
Yeah, we're an evolutionary animal.
Correct.
Every time you crash your car, you got a better car.
Yes. So do you find some truth in that as well, outside of just, hey, this cup of coffee is going to make me happy, but that individual's... Do you believe somebody could be happy without any form of progress? Like, or is that contentment? Does that make sense?
Well, I believe anyone's working toward a worthy goal
is
therefore deemed successful, whether you achieve it or not,
as
long as you're working towards a worthy endeavor. And I do believe that that gives people like you and I happiness, again, because we're type A personalities. But some people, that whole idea of sitting on a rocker and drinking some sweet tea in Alabama on a porch, that's my hell, but other people, that's their fantasy.
Yeah. I can't sit still for too long. And for me to honor what makes me happy, I've got to do these things. So when you're saying, hey, it could be a cup of coffee, it could be this, it could be that, it makes complete sense to me, because I think sometimes people start going down this path that they believe will, you know, lead to their happiness, and they're misunderstood.
Right.
On the process. And so therefore they question what they're doing because it doesn't make sense to everybody else around them. Yeah. Right. And so sometimes, you know, the old saying, a drummer marching by his own beat or something like that, or whatever that saying is, I think more people need to look internal and decide what it is that does make them happy, rather than looking at what makes everybody else happy and trying to copy and paste because they just don't know exactly what they need to do for themselves. So for you, what was that journey like in terms of, like, introspect? Did you have to go through some very low or difficult times to look at the man in the mirror and ask himself some of those quality or tough questions to find the path that you're on now? Or was that like, hey, I met this individual, they led me to this. It's kind of like a breadcrumb thing, and it was, you know, up and up and up and up and up from there. My guess is you probably faced some trials and tribulations along the way and some low points, right?
Yeah, well, the breadcrumbs lead to a lot of potholes, right?
Yes.
Exactly, that's part of it.
You're going to hit struggles.
One of the greatest lines in Alcoholics Anonymous, whether you're a believer or not, one of the greatest things is about progress, not perfection, right? As long as you're working towards something, like I said, you have progress. For myself, I feel like I'm working towards something, so therefore I find my joy, my happy place. And also I have this thing about Daniel Laporte. She wrote this whole concept about non-attachment. Detachment means you don't give a crap. Not a good way to live your life.
Yeah.
Non-attachment means you give everything you got, but you're not attached to the outcome. So every time I write a book, it is the best book that I can physically, mentally produce and put out there. But whether it becomes a bestseller or people like it or not isn't my responsibility. All I'm going to do is birth it and give it the best life possible that I can, and then I'm going to go to the next project. And by having that mental attitude, it opens up opportunities as we go.
I was having the conversation last night at the Airbnb with my team, and I'm just like, because I get up and I run my 10 miles every day. I do 2-a-days and have for over 800 days. So the goal was 1,000 days in a row, because I just wanted to, I heard these people talk about getting lost in the process. Like I heard it, and I was grinding my way to be successful, and I never fully understood the term, you know, getting lost in the process. I'm like, when you're on the path to trying to be successful and you hear all these cool quotes, and sometimes it just doesn't resonate with you because you're in it, you're in the grind. I wanted to know what that felt like for me. And so I created a goal that was big and massive and kind of scary that would force me to focus on every single day and the process of what I have the ability to do in order to reach that destination and kind of just, again, get lost in it. And so I'm like, man, if I could do this for 1,000 days in a row, maybe I can get lost in the process at that point. And now it ends September 28th this year. And for me, it's like, I just don't want it to end, because it really isn't about the 1,000 days anymore. It's really about the individual that I'm becoming. And I find so much joy in this process molding me into a better version of myself.
That's wonderful.
You know, and so it's like, I want people to understand that just because it hurts doesn't mean you're not on the right path, right? And so I want to understand your perspective on, you know, pain and discomfort and getting on the other side of it. Or do you believe that somebody could find a process to success and have it be blissful and enjoy it the whole time?
I grew up the same as you. It's like about doing hard things and grinding. I'm going to teach you one little lesson that I learned about my kid, and I'm just going to pass on because I think it's appropriate.
Sure.
I was doing a podcast like this, and the woman says, do you give your kid money to do things he doesn't like to do around the house and suffer, like mow the lawn, take out the trash? And I go, yeah, I'm going to teach my kid the respect for money.
Yeah.
And I go, he needs to pay his dues. And she goes, stop. She goes, that's a shame. You're ruining your child forever. And I said, teach me. And she goes, think about it. You're training your child from the earliest of memory. The earliest of thought, the only way to make money is to do something they hate.
Mm.
So I sat him down and said, hey, Colt, you know, I've noticed you make all these cool Instagram memes and, you know, TikToks. I go, from now on, you're going to be my new TikTok guy. And I go, every time you do it, you're going to earn money towards, you know, what you want in life. But more importantly, how about you make your bed? We'll call it contribution for living into the lifestyle that you do.
Yeah.
So now when he comes up to me and says, hey, Dad, I want the new Jordans, how many TikToks can I make for you? And it changed the entire paradigm of what he focuses on. So I don't think we always have to suffer for these things. I believe that's old mentality that was passed on to us. But the next generation, I'm not seeing it as much.
Well, what about, obviously there has to be pain and discomfort for physical progress.
Agreed.
Right?
Agreed.
So I guess that there's certain realms where that still might be true. But it doesn't have to be true in every aspect is basically what you're saying, right?
That, and you've got new modalities. Look, you're doing some old school stuff, which is pretty cool. You're grinding, you're beating yourself up, the whole bit. But you and I also know that there's a lot of machinery out there and a lot of apps and a lot of new things that you can work out a little different way of today's society as well, right? There's new things with the cryo freeze from the cold plunges and things that weren't so, you know,
relevant. 10, 15 years ago,
exactly.
20 years.
So there is a way to progress as well.
Yeah.
So for myself, I'm not a gym guy. I don't like going to the gym. So I play tennis and pickleball.
So you find activities that keep you active to serve the purpose of honoring your body, but you're still doing it in a way that's enjoyable to you, just like the form of making money.
Correct.
Okay. It doesn't have to be like this. You could find ways to make money that maybe, do you enjoy writing books? Do you get into a flow state when you do that? Is that something, do you do that more for awareness and because you feel called to serve other people and take information and help others? Or do you feel it, do you do it selfishly for you as well? Or is it a hybrid of both?
I think it's a hybrid, but the main thing is a goal. So when I was a kid, like 17 years old, I did one of those bucket lists.
Yeah, yeah.
And on there was to write a book for being a, you know, a guy barely graduated high school and dyslexic. That was a pretty crazy goal.
Yeah.
And one time I did a speech and a kid came up and said, you should write a book. And I went, oh, yeah. I go, that's a good goal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when I got turned down 268 times, I didn't use that as a negative. That's where you and I are the same.
Yeah.
I took every rejection letter that's still at my house and I taped it to the wall.
Yeah.
So when you walked in, it was wallpapered with negatives.
Yeah.
But I use that as fuel for myself to keep going because I knew I wouldn't let other people tell me what I could and could not do.
Yeah.
I knew I could do it. I just didn't know how. So I didn't get insulted by the rejections until finally I had the courage to call up the publishers and said, be honest, what am I missing? Just be straight with me. I already know you're not publishing my book. What should I do? And they had the courage to say, hey, man, your writing sucks. Here's what you need. And the second they did that, I hung up and said, thank you. I hired a ghostwriter. Here we are today.
Wow. So did one of the ones that originally rejected you, did they end up picking you up or was it?
They all did. They all did. And they still do now. And I played tennis with these people that told me no.
Really?
Yeah. It's so funny. It's the circle of life, right?
Yeah. You got the last laugh on that one. But I mean, nobody needs to obviously laugh. But at the end of the day, I'm a firm believer that, you know, a lot of those no's created the individual that you are that's sitting in front of me right now, right? And so what appears to be negative to the common person is usually a blessing, you know, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road, right?
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
What if God in the universe granted every wish and every prayer, but we didn't like the packaging, so we sent it on its way?
Yeah.
God, I need $100.
Yeah.
Your neighbor comes by and says, hey, bud, take all these aluminum cans, cash them in. That money's all yours. Clean up the side of the house. It's worth $100.
Yeah.
Person might say, I don't want those stinky things. Well, you asked and prayed for it. It was given to you, but you don't like the packaging.
Yeah.
This is where the saying says, be careful of what we ask for, what we project out into the universe, but also be understanding that it might come your way. It also might not be the packaging of what you expect.
In a different form.
Correct.
Right. Let's talk about expectation, right? Do you believe that people should remove expectation when they start going down a path of success and just honor what that process looks like and let it mold them like we were talking about earlier? Because I don't know where it was I heard it. It was something that expectation is the reason for the majority of people's disappointment. They believe that they should have a result that they're undeserving of. Right. I started 3 months ago and I've been grinding or I've been this and where's the result? So they quit and give up. I started going to the gym and I'm not fit yet or I don't have the 6-pack app. So they're expecting something and they're doing it for X result. And when X result doesn't show up in the time frame that they would like to, just because it's hard or because it's difficult, they quit and give up. Right. So the question is, should we just be pursuing whatever it is that is calling to us minus the expectation that we would hope for? Like that's, I mean, that's a tough thing because a lot of people are willing to, there's an exchange. I'm willing to give this if I get this, right? But at the exact same time, if you don't get this, will you continue to show up with that same enthusiasm and that same energy 200 and something different times, right? Like if you had the expectation, like, I'm going to get a book deal, and on the 10th one, it didn't happen. You know, like what? That's a tough thing to juggle.
Okay,
right?
So and everyone's different. So you're asking my feedback.
Yeah,
so my feedback is
opinion.
The easiest way to hit a goal is to have a goal to hit. So I'm a firm believer of having clear crystal goals.
Okay,
a vision of what it is. I'm just not so caught up in how it has to happen. So it's both. So like I said, I'm going to get to the end of the street. I just don't mind how I'm going to get there. And so when I make movies, same thing. Like right now, I'm doing a major land deal. For me, huge thing. I've never done a land deal.
Yeah.
I have no idea what I'm doing. All I know is this is going to happen, and this is the direction. Now I'm going to throw it out, and I'm start asking every single person that can give me counsel to help me guide along the journey. And that is the secret. Most people don't do that. They ask their family and friends and things of this nature, and they get lost. But guess what? If you wanted to go to space and you started asking Buzz Aldrin and started hanging out with Elon Musk and you started hanging with these people that have already done it, you're going to have completely different information than asking some knucklehead at the family barbecue.
Mm.
So again, we can do anything. The moment we put our minds to it, we have a crystal clear picture of what it is, but we don't get so caught up in the minutia along the way. Success is going from setback to setback without the loss of enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And the way you do that is by having a crystal clear picture of where you're going to go without getting caught up in the sidetracked by all the stuff that might come your way.
Yeah, not might.
That will come
your way. That will, without a doubt. There is no might, right?
Correct.
Like, there will be hurdles. It won't show up exactly how you expect it. I mean, you could draw it up 10 million ways. There's still going to be something that comes out of left field.
Imagine skiing. You're on top and you want to get to the clubhouse.
Yeah.
Guess what? On the way down, there's mogul, black ice, snowboarders, trees. I already know that.
Yeah.
So to me, I go, this is it. So every time I get ran over by a snowboard, I go, check that off the thing. I'm good now, and I'm going to go down here, and here's a tree. I don't get caught up in that. I think that's why I'm crazy, is because I expect those things to happen, but I don't let them distract me or scare me off my path, because I know I'm getting closer and closer to the clubhouse.
You've been extremely successful. You've hung around extremely successful people. What are some of the commonalities between these people? There's always got to be some commonalities, right? Mm. What are some of them that are blatantly obvious to you?
Yeah, I wrote a book on it called Stickability.
Okay.
First, there's a dream, then there's a challenge, and then comes victory. Almost everyone quits in the challenging times, just like what we're talking
about. Yeah.
So it's that stickability. It keeps coming down to it. And then the other one is also the ability to get along with other people. Napoleon Hill, when he wrote Think and Grow Rich, there was three things he says, or are called the three causes of failure. And very rarely do people talk about this. And he says, there's many books and tapes and things you can learn about success and achievement. But he says, do these three things and I promise you'll fail. And the number one was, do you want to guess? It was about stickability, about perseverance, about not giving up before the miracle happens.
Yeah.
Number two was procrastination. And then number three was the inability to get along with other people. He realized that if you cannot get a team to believe in your dream and vision, one man can never go alone. He goes, so if these three things, if you quit before you get your dream, you're going to fail. If you postpone and keep postponing until you even get started, you're never going to make it. And the third one is you must get along with other people and share your dream and vision so crystal clear that they just get excited as you are along the journey. That's it.
For me, one of the reasons why I'm on the journey that I'm on, I'm like, well, if I don't try to become all that I can become, then the world's a little lesser of a place. If everybody tried to find the best version of themselves, now there's more people in proximity of somebody that's a better version of themselves, so the probability of them being inspired to become better increases, right? And so I feel some sort of obligation. Like, I don't fully understand it, but as I've gone down this path, success leaves clues, and there's people saying, you know, sending me messages and doing all that. Like, are you hopeful for the future of humanity and people? Do you think that things have to get worse before it gets better? Do you think AI, like all of that? Like, I mean, you've seen and done a lot, and you've been around so many amazing people, and I love just cracking your skull open and hearing your opinions. They're incredible.
So Rumi, the great philosopher, had a quote. It says, whatever you seek is also seeking you in return.
Okay.
So I don't see that same vision that you just explained. So my vision, the people I surround myself with, are positive, solution searching, in wonderment, looking for the next thing of what could be, what's possible.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting down with Peter Diamandis, and the founder of XPRIZE. And he says, Greg, he says, well, you and your friends are doing everything possible to make this world a better place, which is very admirable. He says, me and my friends are doing everything to get off of it to create the perfect planet somewhere else. It was such a different mindset, and it opened my brain. And it says, well, again, if we believe in the power of proximity or the power of your environment, it'd be impossible for you to hang out with me and my friends and have that any other vision than all the what's bright and possible. Not that we put our heads in the sand and ignore it, but that's what we're seeing. We're seeing the bright. We're seeing the pony and all the dog poop or the horse poop that's laying around us because we're seeing that thing. And that's kind of the perception that we do. I have this theory. It's if I came into your house and I had a trash bag and it was full of dirty diapers and rotten cheese, and I opened it up and started dumping your living room, what are you and your wife going to say?
What the hell are you doing?
You're going to say, stop, get that out of here. Yeah. But for some reason, we'll allow people to open our brain, dump all their crap, and we sit and take it. Not me. The second that starts coming to my mind, I go, stop. I go, I appreciate where you're coming from. I wish I could be a counselor and help you. Yeah. If you need some advice or someone, maybe I can introduce you to someone. But right now I got to focus on something that's better serving because I just can't allow that. So I choose not to do it.
So do you think that, do you feel that's blindly being positive for self-preservation? Because, you know, there is stats that say depression's on a, you know, obesity's on an all-time, like things are kind of an average person right now, right? Mm. And obviously they're average because they think average, they hang around average, that like their entire environment,
well, let me ask you this,
is the poop that you're talking about.
Show me, are you hanging out with people that are super obese?
No.
Me either. So is that being a panaceic attitude because you're not seeing or hanging around? That's not your reality.
Yeah.
So my reality is I don't hang around people that are complainer crap heads. That's just it. Because one of the things is that life is short, right?
Yes.
And by having the open mind of seeing what's possible, imagine all that is possible the moment we realize all that is possible. Mm. And for me, that's the mindset that I choose to take and the people I surround myself with. And that also comes with the challenges. Trust me, you'll sit there and say, hey, again, I'm doing this giant land deal. All it is obstacles.
Yeah.
How do we do it? It's like Lincoln Logs. How do we make this puzzle?
Yeah.
We don't complain that there's too many pieces.
Yeah. So you're what you're doing is what it sounds like is you're controlling your environment.
Yes, exactly.
Is really what it comes back down to.
Yes.
Like your perspective is directly correlated with your beliefs, your thoughts, your actions, and a lot of those are correlated back to the environment that you put yourself in.
Correct.
Right? The information that you put into your mind. That is
part of
the environment.
We can never say a negative thing with a positive attitude, meaning you can come and have a completely different mindset than me or a different, and I love that.
Yeah.
I love friendly debate. I love that because I'll change my mind. I'll be a horrible politician because I change my mind a lot because it's friendly conversation and debate.
Yeah.
So I'm open to that. It's just not the negativity and the whining of
it. You're not going to give it attention because you know if you give it attention, then it could seep in.
Exactly. Not only that, but it's just no fun. I mean, there's so many positives and great things right now. I'm seeing, look, you're in San Diego, California, bro. Go outside. You're not going to see a lot of the people you just described. You're going to see a lot of healthy people. You're going to see a lot of people on the beach. You're going to see a lot of yoga. You're going to see, you know, wheatgrass, juice bars, things of this nature, because that's the mindset that we do. Not that it's not existent, but that's not the circle that I live in or myself in.
Yeah.
You get the idea.
Yeah, absolutely. What are, like, after you've accomplished what you've accomplished, you talked about setting a plan and putting action behind it, you know, a target. So what are goals for a guy like you, you know, 5 years, 10 years out? Like, what does that look like right now?
Yeah.
And what continues to make you tick to want to set goals that are continuing to stretch you?
Because it's what keeps me alive.
Yeah.
Without that
gives
carrot,
you purpose.
Gives you purpose. Yeah. Gives you foundation.
Okay.
So, for example, I just finished my last book. I just literally this morning got signed for the publishers, and I'm done. I'm out of the book business. So now I reverse that and said, well, how can I help other people write a book? How can I help give them press? How can I give them all my leads and resources so I can pass it on? I don't want to hold on to it. I just want to share it with somebody else.
Yeah, yeah.
And I realize that mass media is the next phase. It's going to be just like everyone can publish a book now. Well, the next thing, everyone will have a TV show. Everyone will have their own movies. So I'm going to be going towards that realm because I realize that my last movie, you know, was seen by tens and tens of millions of people, but my books haven't been. I've given 20 years to writing these books and publishing them and getting them out, and millions have read them. But I realized by doing one project, tens of millions. So just by economy of scale, say, well, I'm 60 years old. How can I put my attention, the time I have left, to impact the most amount of people? And that's why I'm going to go that direction.
After, again, the success that you've seen, and Jeff told me so many amazing things about you, right? Do you, when you hear amazing things about you, do you let that sink in and do you feel that? Or is it somewhat numb? And do you try to avoid the feeling because it can, you know, make you lose your drive, so to speak? Like that's something that I personally struggle with. That was a conversation I had, you know, somebody posted something. I said, this guy's on day 287 because he came to one of our events. And I talked about, if you want to be one of one or one of few, all you have to do is be consistent at whatever it is that you do. If you're they will not be consistent. So if you are consistent over an extended period of time, you will be one of one, if not one of few. And so he made a post. Hey, I'm on day 287. And he asked, well, what does that feel like to you? And I said, my job's not, I feel obligated to continue to keep going. And he said, well, my challenge to you is to figure out how to let that sink in and feel it more, right? And so I want to hear your perspective after the success that you've had and the good things that I hear about you. You've had to hear good things about yourself. How do you deal with that? And what does that make you feel? Or is it just like, it doesn't, you know, do you stiff arm good information about yourself because you're laser focused on the next project?
It's like the Heisman, right?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
So,
like, what is that?
The truth, it's very hard for me to hear people do like an introduction.
Yeah.
Like coming on stage.
Yeah.
It's the most cringy feeling I've got, to be honest.
Yes.
But I will tell you a lesson that I learned from Les Brown. He's a motivational legend.
Yeah.
And I remember I did an event and I crushed it on stage and everyone gave me a standing ovation. And I was like going, stop. Thanks a lot. Like that same thing.
Yeah.
And I walked off stage and he grabbed me. He goes, what are you doing? I go, what do you mean? He goes, watch and learn. And he walked out on stage and he gave the best of standing ovation talk I've ever seen in my life. And everyone came to their feet and he stood there and he took his hands like this and he went to this and he said, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And he walked off. He goes, that's how you do it. And I, why? He goes, that ovation had nothing to do with you. You just impacted their lives and they were feeling it. And then you just shrugged them off that and dismissed of what you just shared.
Mm.
And it stuck with me. And then I remember one time someone came up to me at an event and I was doing this old diet and they gave me some cookies, a little tray. She goes, here's some cookies. And I go, thanks a lot. I go, I'm actually on a diet right now, but thanks a lot. I don't want to eat those right now. And someone pulled me aside and goes, do you know that person stayed up till 3 a.m. and they drove all the way to come here? And that was a family recipe of cookies they made for you. Wow. So I hunted them down and says, you know what? I'm going to be honest with you. I can make a cheat day. If you do me a favor and I'll tell anyone, I go, I'm going to take these cookies. And I truly want to tell you how much I appreciate it. I couldn't get that smell out of my head. And then I went backstage and I left them for the green room so other people can enjoy them. But by me not honoring those people, we're dismissing them. So sometimes you and I, what we need to do is embrace that because it's not really about us. It's about them.
It's just a tough balancing act. Am I feeding an ego? Right? That's the question.
That's your intention.
It's not the intention, right? Like, but if it's about other people, if I'm doing what I'm doing because I want to be of service, I want my life to be purposeful.
Mm-hmm.
And if I do what I do and I'm serving other people, I feel like I'm honoring out my purpose and it's not necessarily about me, right? And so it's very difficult for me to feel things for me when I just feel like all I'm doing is what I'm called to do and what I'm obligated to do.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's like, you know, it's hard to say. Feel so, you know, like to feel it all. It's very, that's a struggle for me. And I don't like it, you know.
I
hate attention on me. Like you talked, hey, I'm an introvert. I purposely moved out of the city that I live in into a town of 900 people on some land because I just want to be away and create like this environment.
Well, that's why you run 10
miles. Family.
That's why you run 10 miles a day just to go down and get some milk.
Maybe I need to put a milking cow about 10, you know, that'd quench my thirst after 10.
But I get it. So, it's interesting. On this journey, you know, you get to meet all these amazing people and you get all these great stories.
Yeah.
But one of them was interesting for me, Steve Wozniak, the guy who started computers. I said, did you and Jobs, like, did you see all your success ahead of time? How did you do it? And he said, we embraced our lack. I go, what do you mean? He goes, we embrace what we didn't have. Most people run from their scarcity. He goes, we ran toward it. And I said, what do you mean? He said, when these little microchip processors came out, they're very expensive. He goes, Jobs sold his car. I sold my calculator. We pooled our money to buy one. He goes, Hewlett Packard would make machines that go from point A to B with 20 chips. They had all the money of God. Mm-hmm. He says, so what I did is I found a way to pull away 5 and go from A to B with 15. I'd pull away 5, get to work with 10. Eventually, I found a way to go from A to B using our one chip. He goes, we were not trying to be innovative or cool or aerodynamic. We could afford one chip. He says, but by embracing that as an opportunity, I found the shortest, cleanest path. And by doing that, I changed the way people do personal computing for the rest of the world for the rest of their life. He says, where could you be right now in your own existence if you stop looking at something as your greatest challenge and obstacle, but it could just be your greatest blessing and opportunity in disguise?
Yeah. I had a thought while I was running one time. It was super windy. And I was sitting there thinking, I was like, yeah, not all headwind is bad, right? Maybe like it's going to strengthen you. It's going to make the next day that I show up and it's not windy easier. And too often we look at a problem like that that appears to be a problem when in reality it's the path that you're supposed to go down. You're supposed to dig into that, what appears to be a problem in your life, maybe a little bit deeper, and then that ends up becoming, you know, your path, so to speak. And I believe that too many people complain, bitch, or moan about whatever their headwind is right now in their life. And maybe God gave you a headwind on purpose to give you strength. You know, if we all had a tailwind, you know, every single day, we wouldn't be able to develop in the individual that we're supposed to become. And so,
by the way, headwind week, great title of a book. I love that idea.
Really?
Oh, that's a great hook. That's a great hook.
How
for
hard
a book.
Is it for somebody to write a book?
Well, again, I'm going to give you different direction than the average person. Okay, I'll give you counsel, only because I'm good at turning them out.
Yeah.
I got amazing ghostwriters and editors.
Yeah.
So what I do is I sit down with them with an idea and say, okay, a boy wants a bicycle. He gets off his ass. He mows lawns, borrows his dad's lawnmower. He makes money, buys a bike. And then it comes back to me and says, it was a glorious Sunday afternoon when a young bright-eyed lad caught the entrepreneurial spirit. And they write it in the way people would want to read it. So I work my strengths and I hire my weaknesses.
Yeah.
If the bottom line, most people sit there and say, I've been wanting to write a book for 10 years. I say, don't. Hire someone who can write it for you, take all your nuggets, and then distill them in a way that will inspire millions. That's the secret.
Well, what about individuals that sit there and write and write and write and write and write and write
and never get it?
And do nothing with it.
Yeah.
You know, what would be that individual's first step to start making progress to publishing the hours or days or weeks or months or years worth of information that they've?
Yeah, it's a theme from Frozen, let it go. Yeah, you got to let it go. It's like, that's the hardest part about being any type of artist, right? When do you know the painting's done?
Yeah.
When do you know the book is done?
Yeah.
And the easiest way for me is that non-attachment. So I've got great editors, ghostwriters, where I'm working on something and I'll hand it over and go, what do you think? And is it done? Like this last book I just told you I just finished now, every day I want to add another page or another thing, and then they go, it's done. And so I had to let it go and go, it's done. And so I can move on. And here's the best thing. You don't have to write your entire novel in the first book.
Yeah.
You can write a little thing. Yeah. And I believe in parables. I'm a big believer in parables. And my ghostwriters are the world authority in it. So no one wants to hear you tell me a story about how you run 10 miles, for example. However, if we tell a story between a mentor takes a mentee, and one day he's running one way, and the guy pulls his side and says, hey, I want to get into running. Why are you always running that direction? He goes, that's where the headwind's at. So, well, why would you do that? He says, well, that's where you get the power. A lot of people put a backpack on themselves or things that make it heavier, but God gives me my own headwind. And so, well, can I run with you? He says, yeah. He goes, you can go the other direction. He says, no, until you're willing to go this path, there's nothing I can do for you. Let me know if I see you, right? And then you tell a story.
Yeah.
Now people are interested because you're telling a story within a story. And that's how I believe all messages should be taught.
Is there any more imposter syndrome, or do you just, this is me, this is who I am, and just own it fully? Or are there still some environments that your brain tries to turn on you?
Brain's always turning.
Yeah.
No matter what, we got to trick it in there.
You can't. So there's no way, there's no hack or way around that.
Maybe there is.
You show up, put yourself in the environment and go through the discomfort and just keep evolving.
Like I said, I am an introvert extrovert, like we were talking earlier. Yeah. At home, leave me be. I like to be by myself. I like to be in my thoughts. I like to do my stuff. But when I'm in a public setting, I do very well. I can thrive. But that's not really my true environment.
Yeah.
But if I'm on stage, I really excel and thrive because I feel like when I put my jacket on, my stage jacket, I feel like that's my cape. So I think it gives me strength. But as soon as I walk off and I go to the hotel, I'm just Greg. And so it's a really interesting pattern interruption for myself.
What do you believe in regards to speaking things into existence? Because you shared with a friend that, hey, the last thing that I have on my list is this. And we have a business, you know, community networking group, Real Business Owners, the Inner Circle. And when we were originally looking for, you know, our CEO of Easier Accounting, every person we came in contact with, my business partner, hey, how's it going? Oh, it's good. You know, we're looking for our CEO. We planted the seed until somebody said, oh, I know a guy. And, you know, the advice that we always, well, I need that. I'm like, how many people know that you need that? So you had that conversation with that individual, and then that individual brought you the opportunity. How important is it for somebody when they have a need to have that be top of mind and to communicate that with inside of their network and plant those seeds so that, you know, they have the opportunity for that need to be met?
That's a, by the way, I got to give you props. Very well said. And I that is how I live my life. I never just realized it until you just said that.
Yeah.
Like right now doing this land deal, I'm going around people going, how's that land deal go? Unbelievably great. Everything's in flow. Right now, the one missing Chad is XYZ. Everything else is on track. Let me know if you got something that can help with that. That's it. But I always paint in a good picture. It's interesting. One of my quotes of all times was about being always good. I feel so good, even I want to be me. And I realized I was going through a checkout in the grocery store, and the cashier would say, how you doing? She didn't care. She was doing her job. And people would say the same, fair to middling, not bad, double negative.
Living the dream.
Right. Oh. And I go, I'm going to come up with the double positive. Gets to me, and she goes, how you doing? Double positive. Go, always good. And she stopped and looked up, and she goes, how can someone always be good? And I said, Abraham Lincoln said it best. People are as happy as they make up their minds to be. And then it became a mantra. So no matter what, I could be sick, my head in the toilet. How you doing? Always good. And I would speak it into existence. Yeah. And by doing that, I think that's how I've been very blessed and fortunate to attract myself with the most amazing people today.
Yeah. Do you have a book called Always Good?
I had a company and I ended up selling it, but that was the whole idea. Always good. Yeah, it just feels good.
I can see it on a shirt. I could see it on a book. I could see it, you know.
It was just living that thing because it's a double positive.
Yeah.
And if we have that mental attitude, it's amazing all things that are possible. You know, people ask all the time, it says, how is it you attract this law of attraction? Bob Proctor and I wrote a book together called Thoughts Are Things, How Your Thoughts Become Things. Thoughts aren't things. If thoughts were things, I'd be a slice of pizza. I'm hungry. So my thoughts become reality by the actions in which we take. Mm. And they say, show me your friends. I can show you your thoughts. I can show you where you're at.
Yeah.
That's not really true either. It's show me your circumstances you put yourself in. I can tell you how you're thinking. Because if you sit there and say you want a Lamborghini but don't have one, it just means you weren't willing to do what was necessary and sacrifice for that Lamborghini. So that tells me everything I need to know about you.
I think it was Les Brown that said, want shows up in conversation. Expectation shows up in action or something like that, right? When you expect something to happen, you will act in a manner in which...
I got to show you that.
Okay.
This is my first Les Brown.
Okay.
Here's how you honor your mentors.
Okay.
You honor your mentors by honoring your mentors. You actually get counsel and then you go back and feedback and report. This is what's missing. When I wanted to be a speaker, I went to Les. I hunted him down and said, Mr. Brown, I want to be a speaker like you. Give me one nugget, just one thing I could do different in my business. And he gave it to me. I hunted him down a month later, said, Mr. Brown, I met you a month ago. I asked for one nugget. You gave it to me. Here's what I did. What should I do next, sir? What's the chance of him giving the next nugget 100%? And here's what he said. He says, when you take a microphone, you could tell a rookie because they hold it right at the end and go like this and they cover their face. He goes, what I do is hold it at the very end and I give myself connection with the audience. I still use it as a tool, but I don't let it get in the way.
You're not putting a barrier.
Simple little thing. And all of a sudden, that one little nugget led to another nugget.
Yeah.
He ended up, believe it or not, you know, baptizing my kid. And now we're buddies. Now he calls me for nuggets. Go figure.
Yeah. Well, that's the beautiful thing about it. Once you get on a path to success, you start getting addicted to the progress and the person that you're becoming, and it feels good to continue to become a better version of yourself, and it gets addicting. And the next thing you know, you're vibrating at a frequency, you're attracting like attracts like, you know, the people that you look up to end up becoming the people that you rub shoulders with. And, you know, it's...
Do you want to know how to get access to them? You guys want to know how to get access to them?
How?
This is it. Specificity. Most people don't understand this simple little thing. When I want to get access to someone, I don't ask them to pick their brain. It sounds painful. I don't ask them to take them to lunch or dinner or any of that stuff. Here's what I say. I want to get to the founder of Remax. I say, hey, Dave, I'm asking for 12.5 minutes of your time. That is all. From the time I open up the door till the time I leave, it'll be 12 and a half minutes. I'll start a stopwatch. I'm going to ask you one simple question, why you didn't give up 3 feet from gold. The chance of him coming from his office to the break room is so high because it's specific that way. Mm. And you have to honor at 12 and a half minutes. You say, hey, our time is up. Thank you very much. 100% of the time, you're if like, you do it correctly, it'll continue. But that's how I open the door. It's that specificity, 12.5 minutes. And it's the same thing also when I am speaking. And for example, as 10,000 people, I get off stage and there's a long line. They want pictures, autographs.
Yeah.
They say the nicest things. How can I be of service? How can I be of contribution? I don't got 30-minute resume. Someone comes up and says, hey, man, loved your talk. I saw your Instagram. You got a few million followers. By the way, I make those really cool Instagram memes. Let me send you one. If you like it, maybe you'll use me.
Yeah.
8 seconds. I know who you are, what you do. You got my cell phone. We're in contact. That is the modern way of connecting. That's how you network. And that's what I embrace and I tell people to do all the time. That's how I open up all these doors.
Out of all the people that you've met, who has really stood out to you and what made them stand out? Who left maybe the biggest impression?
Great question. And I get this asked, and it usually switches every single time I'm talking, depending upon the conversation that I'm having. Yeah. But I'm being downloaded to share this one, okay? I got a message from a guy who's not famous. His name's Mark Anthony Bates, and was writing this book called Wealth Made Easy. It blew my mind. He taught me the power of something called CPC. It's an acronym that stands for Clues, Patterns, Choices. If I could turn back time in life, I would just learn CPC, and it works like this. Accountability and responsibility. Everything that happens, it's your fault. Stop blaming other people. I find some amazing woman. I'm a single guy. I go out on a first date. She's 20 minutes late. Anything could happen, but there's my first little red flag. It's called a clue.
Yeah.
But I like her. I keep dating her. And every single time for the 15th, 20th date, every time she's 20 minutes late, that forms a P, which is a pattern. Now it's my C, my choice, whether I deal with it, I yell at her, I break up, I tell her a different time, but it's not her fault. She's just late. We have to stop trying to change people to fit into our own paradigm. But we'll see someone with a bad reputation in business. They cheat your best friend. We do business thinking it'll be different. When things go wrong, we're mad at the person. We saw the clue. We saw the pattern. We made the choice. It'd be like seeing a rattlesnake rattle, bite your kid's sister. Yeah. You pet it, get bitten. You're mad at the snake.
Yeah.
Looking back in life, rarely will we be angry at relationships that fell through or negotiations that didn't come to fruition like we expected. We'll always be mad at ourselves because we saw the clues. We saw the patterns, but we made our choices late.
Yeah. Appreciate you being on, man. What a pleasure. Thank you for sharing everything that you shared. And it was an honor to share time with you.
Anytime.
Space with you. It was, and thank you for the introduction. You guys are going to hear from the founder of UGG Boots, thanks to Greg. So I appreciate that. If you guys got value out of this episode, which I know that you did, share it with a friend, a loved one. It's up to us to make the world a better place and control the information that comes into our mind, as well as the individuals that we surround ourselves with. Be the individual that shares good information with others. And so keep kicking ass, guys. We'll see you next week.